Hello, beautiful soul, and welcome to the Connecting Soul Beings podcast, offering you inspiration, tips, and learning about tuning into the language of your soul and gain a deep, intuitive understanding of your inner self, your guides, and the animals around you, so you are able to live from your heart with grace, love, and gratitude. We bring together spiritual leaders, energy healers, and awakened humans, so we are able to collaborate and help you feeling loved, joyful, and free by providing clear direction on how to connect soul to soul. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Connecting Soul Beings. Today's episode is slightly different to what you're used to. However, I'm sure you will still be inspired and love the conversation as much as I did. It is my absolute honor to introduce you to Mithali Deepukesta. Mithali is from the UK, and she helps vegan and ethical experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs put their mission, movement, and message on the map, so together they can change the world one book at a time. Mithali is a keynote speaker, owner of The Vegan Publisher, a book consultancy, 100% vegan-owned Let's Tell Your Story publishing imprint, and she's also the author of the bestseller, The Freedom Master Plan. I'm sure you will enjoy this wonderful conversation. We've had a few laughs as well. So if you have any questions or comments, utilize the comment section below the podcast. We would love to hear from you. Enjoy.
Yeah, I'm Mithali. I'm known as The Vegan Publisher, and I help vegan, ethical, sustainable entrepreneurs, experts, and influencers just make a bigger impact and get their message, their movement on the map by becoming a professionally published author. So that's in a nutshell what I do.
Yeah. Plus a whole lot of things around that.
It sounds so easy. It's like, yes, I just publish them as authors. I mean, there's a whole journey that happens there. I've become some sort of unofficial, I wouldn't call myself a life coach, but I don't know, a motivational coach. It's quite interesting that, you know, I meet a lot of very intelligent and capable people doing what I do.
Yeah.
But as soon as the idea of writing a book comes about, suddenly they retreat into their shells. And I've seen some very capable people suddenly suffer bouts of imposter syndrome. There's something about writing a book that does that to people. You know, they're out there conquering the world, doing amazing things. And then suddenly it's like, oh, God, but what if everyone laughs at me if my book is terrible? And so I found myself like in an unofficial motivational coach role, which I never envisaged when I got into this. But I found that, a lot of my clients need that support. There's this whole other thing that goes on. But in a nutshell, I help people.
beautiful. Yeah, and you've got a real great niche as well, because you purely focus on vegan authors, as I understand it, and people who are extremely compassionate, you know, very much around caring for humans, caring for the animals. And that was one element in particular that I was really drawn to with you as well. When I first met you, I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing, you know, because you really focus on that whole element of making the world a better place. And for you to do that by way of writing is such a beautiful method to utilize in this world. That's really amazing. And it seems to be coming up too, like a lot more people are into books and they're getting back to the physical books again, you know, and it's such a beautiful way to bring your wisdom out into the world.
I think you're absolutely right. There is sort of like a renaissance of books and people buying vinyl and things like that again. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure how I feel about that. On the one hand, it kind of validates me as a woman in my 40s. I'm not too old then. I'm still cool. This is great. So my ego likes being stroked. But there's this other side of it that, you know, I quite like the idea of books, tangible books. I love the smell of a new book. At the same time, I also understand the issue of cutting down trees just to create books. Yes. The fact that my Kindle can hold 5,000 books, like how many trees I saved by doing that. So it's interesting, isn't it? On the one hand, I love vinyl. Again, I love the smell of vinyl, you know, that old school side of me. I remember, you know, one of my earliest memories is, you know, my dad allowing me to open up this big box of his vinyl and the smell that came out of it. I was like, oh, it's like opening a box of treasure. And then on the other, the flip side of it, well, it's vinyl. You know, think of things that have been melted down to create this. And the fact that we now have this whole world of music at our fingertips, you know, surely that is more sustainable than having loads of vinyl
yes.
or loads of tape. So it's a weird one, isn't it? Where you kind of think, which one's the best one to go with?
Yeah, I think it also ties in a little bit with that tangibility that we as humans seek as well, because if we then have that tangibility, it then brings more sensory to the memories that we have, you know, whether it's a book or it's vinyl or something else.
It's less throwaway as well, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
We have things, we look after it because it's, you know, a physical thing where we're more likely, you know, to delete a song or delete an album or delete a book off our Kindle, and it doesn't feel like it's just ones and zeros, really, isn't it? So it's an interesting one how we relate to the world. There's certainly tangible things are more relatable, and you know, you think it's real. Relating it to what's happening with animals and the whole processing of animals that we do as humans, it's kind of done away. Have you noticed? It's done behind closed doors, so we don't see it, and then therefore we're okay with it. But if, you know, who was it that said if people actually saw what was actually happening, I think the whole world would turn at least vegetarian overnight and probably vegan overnight if they actually saw what was
100%.
Happening. Yeah.
Yes.
So there is, there's definitely something about being able to see and feel that makes something real in a way that things online just don't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I just find it fascinating how quickly we can discard of things these days too. And I think that does come with the fact that we don't have that physical book or album in our hands, because it makes it so much easier to discard it, you know?
Absolutely.
And it does make you think, though, and I love the fact that you raise about the animals, because that is such a focus point. I mean, for me in particular with the work that I do, but for you as well in terms of your lifestyle and you know, your principles and your values. We can't ignore the fact that, you know, there is that, not just a tangibility, but there is an aspect of, the word sentient comes to mind. You know, there is that sentience around, in particular with the animals. Absolutely, they are sentient beings.
Oh, yes.
You know, they're just like us. So that's not something that you can literally discard. But I think also with, if we take books for an example, there is a sentience in that too. You know, a physical book has soul. A physical book has energy. It has had a life, you know, especially when they get older. You say you love the smell of new books. I love the smell of old books. Right.
No,
and the whole history that sort of, I'm wondering, where has that book been? Who's been reading this? What's the story behind the person that helped you?
There used to be a book chain where I lived, Bianca. I don't know if you've heard of that. You don't see it much now, sadly, anymore, because a lot of people don't buy physical books. But I remember it was about 13 or 14 years ago, and there was a book chain happening in my city, Newcastle upon Tyne in England. And what you would do is a book that you read, reread, and you know you're never going to read again, you just go, and there was certain places, there was about 50 or 60 places around Newcastle upon Tyne where you can just go and just leave it. Mm-hmm. And then there were other points where you can go and pick up books. So there's like these books just cycling around Newcastle. And it was really good, because I would think that, you know, I'd pick up a book and I wonder how many people have read it. I wonder how it affected them, how it changed the way they thought about this subject. So it's really interesting. Yeah, I love new books, but there's something about old books as well, and wondering who's thumbed through them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now here in especially the area that I live in, some houses have a little book library. In all different shapes and sizes, they have them sitting on their fence. They make a little house for the books, so it has the door so you can open it up and you can. It's like a book library, people have to just attach to their front yard or in the parks. You know, on the edge of a little bridge that crosses the water, there's a book library, and it's all decorated and hand painted, and someone has made that and started with books in there. And you can literally just put some books in, take a few out. They're always full. So people are using it, and you can see the books changing as well. So that's really wonderful to do it that way, like
that's
street
really
libraries.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's really, really cool.
Yeah, exactly. So because in terms of the work that you publish, is there a specific focus for you in who you work with and the type of work that you publish?
Well, I always work with non-fiction authors, mainly because I love fiction, don't get me wrong, but I don't have any experience of that, so I don't feel comfortable. Yes. I won't be able to be the best book consultant for them if it's something I've never written. So I've ghostwritten 7 non-fiction books. I'm the author of my own book now, so that's 8 books I've written, but they've all been non-fiction. They've all been related to business, self-help, or how-to, though, that kind of book. So if somebody comes to me and wants to write a children's book, for example, or a book of poetry, I can certainly help them in terms of telling them exactly what the standard needs to be met if you want to be considered a professionally published author. Because, I mean, self-publishing is a bit of it's a double-edged sword. I love self-publishing. Mm-hmm. I love the egalitarian side of self-publishing. Yeah. Before self-publishing, if you think about it, the publishing houses, yes, they have a high standard that they meet, but they were also gatekeepers. Okay, so I all saw them as gatekeepers, and sadly, with gatekeepers, they will have these unconscious bias as to who should be an author and who shouldn't. Mm. And traditionally, they were usually white. They were a lot of the times male, although women were getting in there, but still biased towards men. And dare I say, men from a particular socioeconomic background. So this is why we have a history of knowing exactly what white middle-aged men think, but not really hearing that much about what women think or people of color think. So I love self-publishing because I love the fact that now, anybody, if they decide, well, I need to write a book, I need to get my message out there, whether it's a fiction, whether it's a story, or whether it's nonfiction, they can do that. The double-edged sword side of it, it does mean that every idiot now thinks they can self-publish. So you do get some absolute monstrosities on Amazon. It makes me wince sometimes when I look at some books and I'm like, oh my God, this has it even been gone to an editor, or has it even just been put through Grammarly? You know, even just put it through Grammarly, please. At the very least, if you can't afford an editor, just get a month subscription to Grammarly and put your manuscript through. And that hasn't even been done. And it's badly typesetted, badly designed. It really hurts the eye to move through the pages, which means you don't want to consume the content. So, yeah, there is the flip side of that. And working with someone like me, I know how to get any book to that professional traditional publishing standard. But the reason I don't work with fiction authors is that that's all I'd be able to help them with. I wouldn't be able to help them with construction and character arc and things like that. It's beyond me. It's not something that I've ever focused on. So I do specifically work with people who want to write in the non-fiction genre. And also I mainly work with people who usually have an established brand or looking to move into a new area of work. And the reason why I do that, Bianca, is I know I jokingly call myself the Simon Cowell of the book world, because I feel like sometimes I'm just breaking people's dreams, and I don't mean to, but I'm trying to show up in the world as best I can as the most honest publisher that you will meet. I'm not going to just say, yes, this is a great idea, let's get you published. I'm going to really assess whether this is in your best interest or not. And if it's not in your best interest, then I'd rather be brutal at the beginning and tell you this, I don't think it's going to work for you, than you spending time and energy and money creating a book and then it flops, you know? So the reason why I work with mainly experts and entrepreneurs is they usually have a business already, and the book acts as a great sales and marketing tool, probably their best sales and marketing tool for their business. Whereas if you don't have an existing business, I'm not saying you couldn't make your book a success, you can, but then you need to give your book, I would say, if you don't already have an established business, then you need to see your book as the business. So are you willing to in the time and effort into your book as if you've opened a new business? And think of how much time, I mean, you're a business owner, Bianca, you know how hard it is to set up a business, get it going, and then keep it running and keep it profitable. And then when I say that, this is when people go, oh, well, I kind of already have a job.
Yep.
I have a family. I have kids. And it's like, right, you know, that, this is what I mean. I feel like I'm the Simon Cowell of the book world, Breaking Dreams. But I'm just trying to be honest and just saying the book business is a hard business. So if you don't have a business already that the book marries into, it's, you need to see your book as a business. Are you prepared to treat it as a business and put that work in? A lot of people aren't. That's the truth.
No, exactly. And, you know, I know firsthand how hard it is to, first of all, to write the book. You know, and people have always told me, oh, you know, you're a great writer. You know, you know your way around words and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but writing a book is a completely different story, you know. Once the editor got into it, it was like, oh, when I first got it back, oh my goodness. You know, so, and it's
just gone straight through it and like cool again, isn't it, you know, and you teach your
hands
with all the red knots, you want the world to swallow you up, you're just thinking, oh my god, I'm completely stupid.
But it is a huge, huge process. It's a huge investment of time and energy, you know. It's taken me probably about 4 or 5 years to get it published. And that's getting into, you know, what am I going to write about? How am I going to word this? Where does it fit in? How many chapters am I going to have? I had like a whole wall full of, you know, post-it notes and ideas and little things that came up. Oh, that needs to go in my book. Oh, that needs to go in my book. And then you just, you know, move that all into little areas of, okay, well, that fits into one particular topic, that fits into the other. But not only that, it's also deciding whether you go down the traditional publishing route or the self-publishing route. And that was really tough to do as well, because like you say, you know, when you go through certain routes, you don't own your book per se, or you don't even own the rights to it. So, and that can be really challenging. And yes, it is hard work to then go into marketing and selling your book. And for me, it wasn't a priority to make money off the book, so to speak. It was more to have a tool that I can either gift or people can buy if they don't necessarily want to or can afford or are not ready to work with me. So, you know, it gave a real nice tool for me to get my name out there more. Because I do notice, like, when people talk to me, they first meet me and they go, oh my God, you know, what's on your, you've written a book. It's still something that people see as, oh my goodness, you've written
a
book.
It really raises your authority.
And I'm sure they go, yeah, I wrote a book. But then when you actually look back at it and think about the process you've been through and, you know, all the beautiful moments, but also the not so nice moments as during the writing process and the publishing process in particular. Well, you know my background story on that one, on the publishing.
Yes.
You know, now you know better. And it's definitely what you're saying about the self-publishing. That's definitely the route to go, in my opinion. But with support from someone like you, because it's still a very unknown area to dive into and it's very confusing. And, you know, even though I know more now than what I did before I even published, but I would certainly go the self-publishing route with support from someone like you, because that makes a lot more sense and it takes away so much of the stress and the anxiety around it, that we can keep focusing on our message and what we are achieving by publishing this book, because it's so easy for that to get lost.
I wish I'd met you a few years ago, although obviously I wasn't a publisher then, I was a ghostwriter, so, you know, our paths wouldn't have crossed. But it's a shame, really, because it kind of, you know, I'm so glad you did it, though. You'll be amazed how many people I've met who've been trying to write a book for years and then they've given up. At least you didn't give up. You know, you're one of the minority who, despite experiencing what you've experienced, you didn't give up and you kept going. There's far more people who give up, and it just makes me wince, because I just think, especially if you're a vegan, sustainable or ethical entrepreneur, you know, you more than any other business owner have a message that the world really needs to hear. you know? We've been told, quite recently that if we don't fix what's happening to the planet in the next 3 to 5 years, whatever we do after that is going to be good enough.
And that
scares me. That's like, I remember we were talking about climate change. I was being taught about climate change when I was a teenager. That's more than, I'm showing my age now, but that's more than half my lifetime ago. And that time they were talking about there's going to be a climate crisis in the 2010s, 2020s. When it's 1992, those times seem like science fiction times. It seems so far ahead that I remember like, oh, we'll sort it by then. We've got ages to go. Well, we're here, guys, and there's literally now 5 years
exactly
to get ourselves out. So I'm really passionate about amplifying the voices of these particular entrepreneurs and experts, because they're the ones who are going to make the difference between whether we still have a planet to live in or whether we're going to have to go and colonize the moon or something like that. I would probably trash that place anyway. I've got a pretty doom and gloom idea of the human race, but I'm kind of thinking if we can't out in this place, then what makes us think we'd make a better go of it elsewhere? I'm not entirely sure we will, but there we go. It kind of hurts my heart a little bit that people have such a hard time writing a book. And you know, the goal of what I do, the goal of my programs and my coaching, is to do that thinking for you. I mean, my kind of USP, if you call it, is the only thing you should be thinking about is your expertise, which is the thing that I can't think about because we don't live in the matrix. It's not like I can download your brain into mine and figure out your expertise. So that is the thing that you need to be thinking about. Everything else you shouldn't be thinking about. That is the job of your book consultant. So things like structure, things of how to lay out the introduction, how things should be edited, best grammar rules. These are things that you shouldn't be, that's not your job. I always think of it almost like if you had a website created, when you spoke to your web designer, what they need from you is like, well, what images do you want to use? What kind of theme are you going for here? They didn't ask you, right, so what kind of coding language should we use? Because you'd be like, I don't know.
That's your job.
You figure out what's the best coding language and whether things should be stored inside or somewhere else. Or what. That's your job. Or otherwise, what am I paying you to do? If you don't write stuff out, it's the same thing with working with a book consultant. If your book consultant is not giving you the structure within which to hang your book on, then sack your book consultant, because they're not doing that. That's the whole point of a book consultant. You know, you should only be thinking about your expertise. And that's exactly what my clients do. They are just thinking about how to download all this expertise in their brain into a manuscript. Everything else is laid out for them step by step, so they don't have to do any of the thinking. So really, it hurts my heart that you had to go through that for 4 or 5 years, you know, because my clients are writing books in weeks or months. None of them more than a year. And that is the absolute, I've had two clients that needed a whole year, but that was only because things happened in their lives which meant that they had to drop it for a little bit and then come back to it later. Mm. In most cases, most people are doing it between 3 to 6 months and the book is published. And that's how fast the book can come together when you're not doing, unfortunately, what you did, which is, you know, you're thinking of your expertise, but then your brain is moving into all this book stuff that you had to think about.
Mm. To the point where I ended up designing my own cover. There was no support.
I felt so bad for you. I was like, you know, and you're not a designer, so it's not. I mean, you did actually very well. I've looked at your cover. I thought, actually, bearing in mind that you had no support, you just had to do it yourself. You did very, very well. But again, that's the stress that you shouldn't. Again, it's like a website designer telling you, okay, so, and then they start saying, right, so should we use jQuery here? Or should, and you're going, why are you asking me that question? Why can't you just figure that stuff out? Because that is your job to figure out. And it's a shame you went through it, but I'm glad you did. Mm. And I'm glad you're seeing, you know, the benefits of it. You've, without needing any coaching from me, you've actually figured out what was the point of writing a book, that it isn't about making a ton of money from the book itself. It's more the raised authority that you get from writing a book.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you said, you know, people go, oh my God, you've written a book. That's amazing. I used to do this thing before the pandemic when I had, you know, face-to-face talks and speeches that I can do. I would get people to stand up in a room and then I would say, I want you to stay standing up if you've got a website. And practically everyone will stay standing up. Maybe one or two might sit down if I've got a crowd of influencers, because there's some influencers who are just huge on Instagram and they don't really need a website. But in most cases, nearly everybody stays standing up. Then I'd say something like, I want you to stay standing up if you use social media for business. And again, most people stay standing up because most people are doing it.
Yes.
Then I'd say, okay, so I want you to stay standing up if you have business cards. And then you might get a few people sit down because there's a lot of people who don't really bother with business cards. But again, most people stay standing up because they're in a face-to-face talk anyway.
Yes.
So they wouldn't have brought business cards. And then I'd say, okay, I want you to stay standing up if you are a published author. Practically the whole room will sit down. And what's really interesting is sometimes it's happened a few times where they'll look around and if there is one or two people standing up, they just, you know, they just break out into a spontaneous applause. You know, oh my God. And I always say, now imagine, would you have done that if they had a website or they were on LinkedIn? Would you say, well done, you're on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
No one would do that. But there is that respect and authority that you get when you publish a book. And you can really leverage that in your business and be seen as better than your competition. You know, so that's kind of where I'm coming from, as opposed to people who want to just make a ton of money from their books. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's a tough old business. There's think of the margins involved in books. Even if you sell paperback books, you're making what, $1-$2 a book? How many books do you need to sell? You need to sell an awful lot of books to make a decent living. So it's a very, very different business. And that this is what I mean about the Simon Cowell of the book world. I feel like sometimes I'm breaking dreams. But I want them to understand that because they've got this idea that they just publish something and suddenly it's going to take off. And I'm like, no, those stories that you hear, they're very rare. That's why you hear about them. You don't hear.
And it's so refreshing. It's so refreshing that you are that way, because that's what you need during a process like that. Because writing a book, I found it such a personal deep dive into my own journey. And to bring that forth and to be able to put certain elements under words and onto paper where you go, oh my God, nobody's ever heard me say this, or I've never spoken about this to anyone, but it's relevant. I need to touch on that in the book here. You know, it's such a growth journey in a way, because you do go really deep within yourself to figure out, how am I going to share this? And is anyone going to be inspired by that? You know, to talk to yourself like that as well. And like, well, that was just my life. But when you write things down, and I've had in particular two friends read through it, and they said, oh my God, you need to really knot this out more, because that is gold in that particular piece. And then I found a really great editor. I think you may know her, Mem Davis, here in Australia.
I've not spoken to her, but I've heard of her, yes.
Yeah. So, and she was similar as well. So, oh no, that needs to be really, you know, knotted out. We need to go deeper into that. And then you go, okay. You know, because there is this whole element of, oh, now it's out on paper, it's in black and white, and it's going to go out there in the world, and you can't retract it because it's, you know, in a book. So it's that was a huge learning in a sense too. And at the same time, it really helped me to identify more about myself. It was almost like you're peeling certain layers off to really identify more about who you are as a being. And also to recognize that every single person, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, what point in your life you are at, you can always inspire at least one person.
Oh, yeah.
With what you've experienced. There's always someone that says, oh my goodness, I needed to hear that. or wow, I'm going to take that away and I'm going to, you know, really absorb that and see what I can do with that for my life. There's always something, and there's always that one person. And that what kept me going as well, because there is that one person, maybe two. You know? So
I'm sure there's more with you. I've actually got your book somewhere. I got it, and
I've
just managed to read about four pages of the book, because, as you know, my own book came out a few days ago. So it's
yes,
crazy town at the moment. So absolutely, forgive me, I haven't managed to get that far into your book.
That's okay. Perfectly fine.
I really do want to read it, because I was listening to one of your earlier shows and you were talking about, you know, that it was a snake that actually spoke to you. And I was like, oh, my,
yes.
I got so jealous, actually. I just thought, they've never spoken to me. I've seen snakes before. But they've never spoken to me. What's wrong with me? If you can speak to Bianca, speak to me.
Oh, they can speak to you, definitely.
I think animals are communicating with me. Maybe I'm just not hearing yes. their voices the way you are, but there's certainly... No. Strange enough, my earliest memory is being at primary school here in the UK. I must have only been about, I would say, six or something like that. This was back mm-hmm. in the 80s when there weren't as many regulations as they are at school now. So I do remember someone bringing in an invited guest, a special invited guest to the school. Mm-hmm. And they had a pet snake. And you know, for all the children that wanted it, he would be able to put the snake around their shoulder. So one of my earliest memories is having now I don't know how big the snake was, because when you're 6 years old, most things are huge. So I don't have to know. In my memory, it was just a huge, you know, boa constrictor. So this is how I remember this huge thing. You know, his head was almost the same size as my head. Now looking back, I realize it probably wasn't that big of a snake. It was more in comparison. But that's what I remember. And I remember just feeling really wrapped up in this snake and thinking it had the cutest face in the world. And it was flicking out his tongue. And his tongue was like, you know, hitting my nose. And I thought that was the cutest thing ever. I'm feeling really sad when that snake was taken away from me, because the next child needed the snake. And just feeling my skin, and I had no idea that, you know, snakes have this secretion on the skin that they leave on your skin. And it is just the nicest thing on your skin. I just hope that knowledge hasn't been used by humans to harm them, to use them in products. I have a bad feeling that there is probably something like that going on. I've just noticed human beings do that. We look at nice things of animals and then we see how can we just extract it from them. And instead of just enjoying it from them, we see, you know what I mean? It defies all logic, but I've always thought, I wonder the very first person who decided to make something from fur, do they just look at the fur of an animal and go, oh, that's really beautiful. Isn't it cute? I think it looked cuter on me. And you just think, what makes you think that? What makes you think that is acceptable? But that's just how... Mm. Sadly, we have been as humans. We just need to do better. So I hope that, you know, that was one of my earliest memories, just feeling my skin and just going, wow, my skin feels amazing because this snake was wrapped around me. But no, it didn't speak to me. So I'm still very, very jealous that you get to speak to them and I don't get to speak to them. But yeah, that's why one of the key reasons I wanted to read your book, because I just thought, wow, you know, she's actually the first conversation she had with animal was a snake. And I've always felt, I don't know, I've always felt a little bit of an alignment with snakes. I always felt that they've got a bit of a bad reputation. I think it comes down to the whole Adam and Eve thing. Even though most people don't even believe all that stuff anymore, but there's this belief that a snake, think of how we use it to call people. It's like, oh, that person's a snake. That's not said in a nice way, is it? You don't call someone that you like. And I've always thought, what do snakes do? They're cool.
Yeah.
You know? Why would you call somebody that you don't like a snake, you know? So, I was always a bit jealous. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm glad that you're seeing the benefits of a book, especially because you've had a bit of a tortuous journey as an author.
Yes.
Exactly. I wish we'd met earlier because, you know... it just makes me sad, and then that's my main goal with my publishing company, especially with vegan and ethical entrepreneurs, because like I said, you know, you guys have a bigger message. You know, there's a lot of talk now about missions. I think somebody did a huge webinar back in 2016 and told all business owners they needed a mission. So now have you seen it? You see everyone's got a mission. I'm usually sat there quite cynical about it. Like, is this really your mission? Or is this because you saw some webinar saying it's important that you need a mission, so you've created a mission? But the thing with the vegan and ethical entrepreneurs is that is a mission that I believe, you know. Because having a business is hard enough. Having an ethical business, a vegan business or a plant-based business is even harder, because now you have this extra layer of making sure you do things ethically. And usually, sadly, in this world, it means that costs more. So, for example, I had my websites designed by an ethical, sustainable company, which cost more than if I'd gone to a website designer who didn't really care about that kind of stuff.
Yes,
my hosting is more expensive because my hosting is green hosting. You know, so they're making sure they're planting trees for every. I think first of all, I've got my emissions. The normal website page emits around 2 to 4 grams of CO2 per page. Whereas my my websites only emit 0.23 or something like that. Basically, it's not even one, you know, what, not even 1 gram per page. And guess what? It cost me more to have that website designed, and my hosting costs more because it's green hosting and not just with a standard hosting company that doesn't care about CO2 emissions. So we have this extra weight on us that actually means that we have more outgoings than a non-vegan or a non-ethical company, because we're doing things right. So I know that when I hear a mission from a vegan or a plant-based or ethical or sustainable entrepreneur or expert, they've not just watched a webinar from a few years ago and decided to knock up a mission. It's a mission that they really believe in. So that I want to then get that mission out to that bigger world.
Yes.
So hopefully we can avert this disaster that's going to happen in the next few years.
That's right. That's right. And it's interesting too, because when people do speak about their mission, you can see it, whether it's something that they truly believe in or whether that's, oh yeah, I just had to do that because it's part of my marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. It has to be something that's so close to your heart that it has to have that emotional attachment to it. You know, you have to live it as well. Not just from your business. In my opinion, the way I run my business as well is it's not just my business. It's my whole life. This is who I am.
Yeah.
Because this is what I do. And that's my mission in life.
I would say, right? it's your activism. What your business is your activism. Mm. And that's why I love working with this section of entrepreneurs and experts and influencers, because first of all, I believe their mission. And secondly, I can always, the thing I love about books is you can't really fake it. Okay. So you can have a mission that you've kind of knocked up because you've been told that really that's the thing now in marketing. You need a mission, you need a vision, you know, you need all these buzzwords now. That's not going to be enough for you to write a book. Let's be honest.
No,
you can't stretch a fake mission over 150 plus pages. So I think a book is a great way for being able to find who the fakes are and who aren't. And the wonderful thing is, because of the section of people that I'm working with, these people have real missions. Like I said, it's hard being a business owner. It's even harder being an ethical or vegan business owner, because you have those extra constraints of trying to do things right. So if you're still hanging in there and doing it, I know your mission is real. I know it's not just something that you put together. And then I know the book's going to be great, because I'm not, it's, you know, sometimes, you know, in the past, I've actually ended up saying no to some people who weren't vegan or plant-based or ethical. They're just a standard business owner. And it was like getting blood out of a stone when it comes to a book. And I hate books with padding. So I always think if you're having to add in extra words just to pad your book out because you're trying to hit over 100 pages or whatever, it means your mission isn't, you're not really all that passionate about your mission. Whereas I tend to find now that I focus on ethical and sustainable vegan entrepreneurs, I'm having the opposite problem. They have too much going on and I'm having to whittle it down. And I'm having to almost say, you do realize there's no law that says you're only allowed to write one book. You can write 2 books, 3 books, 4 books. And then they go, oh, yeah, I suppose I don't have to put everything in this one book, do I? It's like, no. So I have the opposite problem with these people.
Yes.
There's too much to say and there's so much passion that I have to whittle it down and say, okay, let's figure out what's going to be your first book and then let's leave the rest for future books.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great place to be. I always say it's much better, even as a writer, it's much better to have a ton of words that you need to whittle down rather than not enough and you're trying to pad it out.
Absolutely. Writing. Yes. Yeah, because I was also part of a collaborative book this year, which was published in February this year. And we were limited by the amount of words because there was 25 authors in the one book.
Oh, okay.
And so that was really challenging to, you know, hold a chapter to that particular amount of words. And I was like, oh my goodness, because there was so much to say around that topic. It was intuitive living. So, and I really had to work with the editor as well to say, well, how am I going to reword that then? Because I have no clue. And also because you stare at it for so long, you've been writing it for such a long time. And then it's just like, yeah, I don't know. So you tell me. What can I take out? Does it still keep the guts of what I'm trying to share, you know? So that's the challenging part.
But I bet that chapter
fantastic
because, you know, like I said, it's better to have too much going on and then you have to
whittle
it down to leave the
goal.
Yeah. It's better that than, you know, you're having
than to having to search that. For what else am I going to put in.
That's all. I've seen books. I've read books where, you know, there are 150 pages, and I just thought it could have been done after 80. You know, that would have been enough. There was no need for the extra. So I know what happened. They felt like they needed to pad the book out to make it more book-like, so it was thick enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mine's not that thick, but it does get you to work. So I'm putting you to work in it. So you will learn how to communicate with animals.
I'm looking forward to it because I'd love to.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, there's already lots of non-verbal
Everybody can.
Communication. Mm. I think everyone who has animals in their lives will. It's something that my vet always says, you know, when I say, oh, she's making this strange meow and she's never done it. And they look at me and they go, well, you will figure it out. It's like it's difficult for us to say what different meows mean because we're not living, you know, with
exactly.
Cat. So you are the one living with them. I found that they're very right. I usually kind of can work out. Isha, my cat, now has now got to making an almost baby-like sound that she does on purpose when she can't be bothered to walk up the stairs. So she'll make a sound and she'll expect you to pick her up and take her up the stairs. Oh my god. You see, if my vet heard that, they wouldn't know what that meow meant.
No. But
I know exactly what that meow means, you know.
Yeah.
So we are communicating. It's just being nice to hear her words.
Yeah, you'd want to do it on a conscious level rather than, you know, guessing what it is. And we know it already at an intuitive level because similar with, you know, parents that have children, they know intuitively what's wrong with their child. They know intuitively what's wrong with the baby when they're crying and whether it's a hungry cry or an upset cry or whatever it is, right? Same as you say about your cat too. You know what the meow means. We know it, but we don't always accept it because we don't hear what they're saying. We don't hear what they're telling us. It's not tangible. We may feel it. And then often we don't trust what we're feeling and what we're getting through and what we're sensing. So, and that's the challenge that a lot of people have. And this is also the challenge that they have in terms of trusting themselves. Yeah. You know, it's what I mentioned about writing my book. It's going really deep within and trusting that what you bring out to share that with the world are the right things that they need to hear. So, and it's the same when we communicate with our animals, but even with people, when we communicate with other people, we need to engage our full sensory skills that we have that we don't always use. I call it our spiritual skills, right? So that when we are communicating, that we don't just hear what they're saying, but we're actually listening by observing how they behave, how they move, what their eyes are saying, feeling the energy when you're together in a room as well. Even now here online, we can feel each other's energy. So having that more conscious awareness around how we communicate with people, that's how we communicate with our animals too. Absolutely. And then when we practice that more, the messages become louder and louder and louder, and therefore we can maybe even hear them, you know, my primary sensor is audience, clairaudience and clairsentience. So I sense a lot, and then I hear the words that come with that. So I can hear the animal's voice in different tones, in different ways that they speak to me. Before that was activated, I could sense it really well, but I couldn't hear them.
Yeah.
So, and that was a real, like, I was very frustrated by that, because my animals, my dogs, I knew they were talking to me, but I could never understand them. Like you with your cat, like, yes, he meows, but what really does that mean? Now yeah. I can sort of understand what the differences are, because you're more tuned in. And the more we do that, the easier it becomes to then also communicate with them. And I see the same with writing books. The more we engage all our spiritual skill sets, our intuition, listening to the inner voice that we have, in all the different ways that it presents itself, whether that's through words or visions, or we can sense things, or we can feel the emotions, or we can feel energies. When you write in that from that space as well, that's when we really get our message across in the right way, because you write from your soul's perspective with some human experience in that, but we write from our soul's perspective. And that's also what I'm really passionate about, like talking about missions, is one of my missions is to teach people to live from your soul's perspective, not your human perspective.
I love that. And I think there's something that I say quite a lot to my clients is, you know, and they think, some of them think it's a little bit, you know, woo-woo, but I'm just like, no, trust me. You know, I've been writing books, articles, all kinds of content that you can think of for over 20 years. And I believe that content is received in the energy that it's created. And there's something that I can read an article in a newspaper and I can usually sense whether someone was like, that reporter was having a good day or a bad day when they wrote it. You know, I can just tell whether what was this rush, was this like, you know, were their editor really coming down on them and saying, this needs to be in the next few minutes, otherwise it's not going to, and I can almost feel their energy. And which is why I always make a point of, you know, before I write anything, whether I'm writing an article, whether I'm writing a book, whether I'm writing anything, I make sure that I get myself into a good state. So I have a great morning routine, because I'm not a morning person. So I'm not going to be at my best working in the morning anyway. So I might as well use my morning to do things. I go for a walk, meditate. I do a lot of dance classes. I've always liked dancing. I spend somewhere in the region of 2 to 4 hours every morning just getting into a good state. So then in the afternoon, I can write if I needed to write. I'm doing less of that now, because now I've moved more into, I'm a book consultant and publisher now. So now I'm more helping other people write as opposed to writing myself. Yes. So I don't need so much of my routine. But before that, when I was a copywriter and a ghostwriter, in other words, I was writing 5-6 days a week. That's what I used to do. I would spend nearly 3, sometimes 4 hours every morning just getting into that wonderful, happy, contented state. So that whatever I've been commissioned to write, whether it's a book, whether it's articles, whether it's a sales page, whether it's an email sequence, I'm writing it with that positive energy, because I know that actually affects how well that piece of content will do. Because people feel that, even if they're not consciously aware of it, they feel your energy through your words.
Yes.
So I completely get where you're coming from, that whole soul connection when it comes to writing a book. I always say to all of my clients, if you're having a bad day, don't cram in writing for your book. Just let it go. Come back to it the following day. It's no big deal. Come back to it the following day when you're rested and you're not being harassed by your business or your kids or whatever that's going on in your life. You know, because your readers will feel that negative energy if you're forcing yourself to write.
100%. Yeah. And I think that applies to a lot of things in our life as well, you know, not just the writing process. When we go in with a really good energy and we feel great about ourselves and we are in a space where we are, you know, creative beings, no matter what we're doing, cooking a meal or, you know, doing a video or a podcast like this, you know, if you're not in the right state, then yeah, people are going to notice that. They're absolutely feeling it. They're seeing it. They're sensing it. And we love cooking. My wife and I, we absolutely love cooking, and people always enjoy the food that they eat. And whether it's the most simple meal or something new that we're trying out that's more complicated, they just love it. But that's because we love preparing food and we really enjoy being in the kitchen and just, you know, so and trying out different recipes. And I'm more of a creative cook. I just open the cupboards and just, you know, pull something together. Lana is more like, need to follow the script and the recipe. But we really both enjoy it. And you just notice that when you are in that state of enjoyment and you're really passionate about doing something, people sense it, no matter what, right?
And so, I think that it goes back to why I like working with this group of people, apart from the fact that I've been, you know, vegan for over 10 years and I'm doing my best to lower as much of my carbon footprint. So obviously there's an affinity because we have the same values and ethics, but also because of that passion, you know, it makes for great books. Like I said before, I moved into working with this group of people. With some authors, it was a little bit like getting blood out of a stone sometimes. And I just don't have that experience anymore now. Now I have these people who are ultra passionate about what they do. They have a genuine mission. And like I said, not something that they've been told they need to have because it's good marketing or anything like that. And that because of that passion and the love and the energy that they bring to the process, it creates incredible books. I just actually, I need to say something. So I just found out a couple of days ago, one of my authors, Amanda, she's based here in the UK, vegan, of course. And her book is all about helping women in the UK get pay parity because we still don't have that here in the UK. You know, there's still, women are still being paid less than men.
Same here.
The bigger issue, sadly, it's amazing that we're still talking about this in 2022. It's like, why is this still a thing? Why is this not being completely outlawed? The bigger issue here in the UK, I don't know what it's like in Australia, Bianca, but bigger issue in the UK is that we have this scheme where your employer has to pay whatever you pay into your pension, okay? So if you're paying a ton of money into your pension, your employer has to kind of match it to a certain extent. If you're paying $1 million into your pension, you can't expect your employer to do that. But to a certain cap, they have to pay what you pay into your pension. So which is really, really cool. The issue is a lot of women are leaving work to go and have children. Some of them don't come back. Some of them do come back, but they come back part-time, which was seen as a great thing when it was announced in the 90s that women were are allowed to come back and that it's part-time and it's seen as progressive, and it is progressive, it's wonderful. The unintended consequence of this is that because they're coming back part-time, now their employer, they're paying less into their pension because they're only working part-time, but their employer is paying less into their pension pot. The upshot of all this is that the average woman in the UK is retiring with a fifth of the pension pot that the average man Now, this doesn't matter so much if you remain with your partner that you had kids with because it's all coming into the household. But as we all now know, a lot of people are now divorcing in their 50s, empty nest syndrome, and then they look at each other and they realize, I don't really like you all that much anymore. And they want their next phase in life, which I think is wonderful. There was a time where you just stuck with the person that you married. I love the fact that now we have the freedom to say, is this what we want? Or, you know, we've still got all this life to lead. Would I want to be with somebody else? But a lot of women, sadly, are now retiring into poverty. So it's a very powerful book that she's written because the book is all about helping. No, it's not specifically telling women not to have children because that's just women will want children, men want children. But it's more educating women on what the unintended consequences of having children and then possibly not being with your partner, the partner that you have children with, in your later years and what that can mean for you and how to have that conversation with your partner. Because really what should be happening is that he starts paying into your pension pot because you're not just having kids for yourself, you're having them for him as well.
Yes.
It's a joint thing. So it's a wonderful book. And it's, you know, the reviews she's had people say, this should be required reading for anybody from the age of 16 to 80 for all women. They need to read this and understand what is going on.
Wow.
But recently, I've just been told a couple of days ago that a huge women's entrepreneurial network in the UK has just ordered 3,000 copies of a book, and they're going to send them out to all of the members and just say, and then hopefully from that, I have a funny feeling, Bianca, that Amanda's going to end up working on a consultancy basis with the government and helping them with legislation in the UK.
Yes, that sounds perfect for her.
Yeah, you know. But this is what I mean about a mission. It was so, I mean, she was a dream client to work with because her soul was telling her that this is what she's a financial planner. And she was just noticing over the last 10, 15 years that
these
women, and she was looking at their finances and just going, oh my God, how do I tell this lady who's had a reasonably good life? You know, she's had money. She hasn't really needed to worry about bills, that now in her later years, she's probably going to plunge into poverty, all because she went and had children, which is something that women and men want to happen. It's a natural thing to do. And yet she's being penalized, but the guy not penalized whatsoever for having kids.
No.
So I hope you can see. I mean, even I'm passionate about her cause now. You know, because the wonderful thing about being a book bully is and taking on everybody else's cause.
Wow. Yes.
Cause. Like, oh my God, I had no idea. But this is what I mean. When you have a real passion, when you, and like I said, it tends to be vegan or ethical or sustainable entrepreneurs. They seem to have a real mission, not a made up mission as a marketing ploy, but a real mission. The book just flows. Once I give them the structure, like I said, so you don't, you know, they don't go through the struggles that you went through. I've done all the book thinking for them. All I'm asking them to do is add passion, which they've got in abundance, you know, and then they just pour that into my book structure. And I think she did a book in about 4 months. It was done.
Wow.
Very, very simple. As long as you come to me with that passion and that expertise and that real soul connection mission, then I can turn you into very, very quickly. It's when you don't have that, I'm going, oh my God, man, this is my going to have a stone, how is this going to work? You know, but
fantastic. Wow. And you know, and I love your passion in this. You know, you are so excited about helping people to really publish their work and so excited about what you're doing, you know, and I would love for every single person to be able to have that passion for themselves, to be able to be so excited about what they do in this lifetime. And that's something that, you know, is part of my big mission, because that's sort of like an extension of what I'm working on with my clients is really figuring out for yourself, you know, who you are as a being and what you're here to do and what your passions are, because you start to live from that place. And it doesn't matter whether you have a business or a career. Yeah. Everybody has a passion. Everybody has a mission that follows that passion. So, and that's really important for us to keep in mind, to be able to have a life that we absolutely enjoy every single day. So, and I'm so grateful for you to facilitate, you know, the process for people to bring their wisdom and their mission out into the world through the book is just absolutely amazing. Yeah.
I love that. I've always said one of the best, I can never get over that feeling of when, you know, I always get a WhatsApp picture from a client who's just received the first shipment of their books and they're feeling their book for the first time in their hands. And I'm always like, send me a picture. But send me a picture exactly when you open the box. And it's just, I can even smell, even though I physically can't, obviously, but I can almost smell the, you know, that book smell when you open the Amazon box and that waft of book smell comes out. And I can see the picture and you just see, I can't get over, I'll never get tired of seeing their face. It's like, I've done that. You know, that I'm a published author, a professionally published author, not, you know, just some tacky ebook that I've stuck on my website. It's a proper book that people can touch. And, you know, it's, and I know, because I mean, look at Amanda, that's just one example. I've published 16 authors to date, and they've all got these incredible stories that they now say, you know, that started from their book. So I know that this is, you know, just publishing the book is just the first step. Where it's going to go for them after that in terms of how they really impact the world. I mean, like I said, Amanda could potentially be changing, helping the government change legislation in the next few years. you yes. know, making yes. it, you know, illegal, for example, for companies to decrease how much they put into a pension pot for a woman just because she's going to have children, you know, that kind of thing. She can really change women's financial futures, future generations. So that's how big it can get. So I get excited because I know I see their excitement in their face, you know, when they send me that picture on WhatsApp, they've just opened the book. And then I always send them a message saying, just wait to see what happens after this. You think this is the precipice. Yes. It's not. This is not even you're at the bottom. You're just at the bottom of the mountain here. There's a whole summit that you're going to get to that you don't even realize where that's going to go. And that's what happens when you write a book with full of passion and your mission and what you really want to make happen in this world and things that need to change. You know, it's very exciting. I love being the conduit. I feel like that I'm the conduit that's making, putting people on that right path and making it happen for them. It's very gratifying.
Yeah. Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. Do you have a golden nugget for the listeners and the audience?
Yes, I do have a golden nugget. And it actually ties into something that you said earlier about post-it notes. It kind of made me wince a little bit. I was like, what if there was a gust of wind and all the post-it notes were flying off, you know? Nightmares about this sort of thing. Maybe it's even a book and something. But people tell me, it's like, oh, well, I thought, you know, I'm bored with post notes. I'm like, oh my God, post it notes. It's like, oh, I just pin them in. I'm like, what if the pin falls out? Like, you just lost all that, you know, and I have nightmares. Please, whatever you do, don't use post it notes. The best advice I can give you is use mind mapping software. So my clients use a free mind mapping software called mind42.com. So it's basically mind and then the numbers 42.com. And that's a great way for you to start organizing your thoughts. Okay. And just like what you said about post-it notes, you can say, oh, well, that actually would be better over here. And you move post-it notes around. You can do that with a mind map. And you don't have to worry about a gust of wind getting rid of it. But the other wonderful thing is what I've noticed with a lot of my clients is once they've understood why mind mapping works. And the reason why mind mapping works so well is you're mimicking the human brain. The human brain doesn't think in a linear way. Think of how you think of something and then suddenly that flashes into something else. And then that flashes into something else. And then it's almost like your brain with synapses everywhere. Well, that's exactly what a mind map is mimicking. So that's why mind maps are so effective, because they're actually copying what a human brain actually looks like. If you actually went for a brain scan, you would see the human brain doing the same thing where ideas are coming out.
Yeah.
Well, that is a much better way of organizing your thoughts. But what I found is you can now use that not just for books, but for everything. I've had clients contact me, and now they understand the art of mind mapping because they've written a book with me. They're now using it for other things. So, for example, I had one gentleman tell me, oh, I created the best business plan because I mind mapped it all out first. I was like, wow, he's using mind mapping to create a business plan. I had another lady who used to really struggle creating social media posts. You know, she's like, I don't know what to say. You know, I know I should be posting nearly every day, but I just can't come up with stuff. And she was always having, you know, blinking cursor syndrome when she's like, I know I need to write something, I don't know what to write about. Now what she does is at the beginning of every month, she creates a mind map. She just throws all these ideas, and any new ideas come in, she goes and puts them into a mind map. So whenever she needs to write a social media post, she just comes to a mind map and goes, oh, I haven't written about that, I'll go and write that now. So now she's using that for social media content. So yeah, get into mind mapping, guys. So once you put some effort in, fantastic, how it works, you can now use it not for writing a book, but literally you can organize your business in a mind map, and you can almost future plan your business and what you're going to do. There's so many applications for it. There really is. So get into mind mapping.
Great. Okay, wonderful. This was an awesome conversation.
Thank you for having me.
I loved it. Yes.
Thank you so much definitely. For listening to yet another inspiring
and for everybody watching and listening, I will put all the details of Mitali below.
I love receiving your comments, you'll stories, find all her and links feedback and as contact they are truly details. Inspiring. So please take some time with to comment on this episode.
Yeah, I was actually going to do
the show. You can help us by sharing and liking it via your favorite podcast platform and our website. And if you feel that we can work together in helping you to connect to your inner self, and the animals, then hop on over to biancaderose.com or find me on LinkedIn, Facebook,
or maybe you decide it's not for you, but then that's a good thing as well, because you have to talk to yourself.
Thank you again so much
about whether you should write a book or not. Yes, I will say, go and get my book. By the end of it, you'll know whether you should write a book or not, and then either way, you're a winner.
exactly. Fantastic. All right. Thank you so, so much. You are a beautiful soul and you do amazing work out there. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Bianca.